I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, what's up? Back here at the Core Club for Soul Sisters with my girl, Dara.
What up?
I feel like I need to correct something that I said previously.
Oh yeah?
It's been bothering me a lot. I made an errant metaphor that said that you left me high and dry on the podcast like a pup tent in a hurricane, and nothing could be less high or dry than a pup tent in a hurricane.
I'm not processing any of that stuff. What is
These are the things that keep me up at night.
A pup tent.
A pup tent in a hurricane would be very low. It would be completely flat under a puddle of 10 feet of water.
What is a pup tent?
It's like the most basic tent that is like three poles. Like you just pop that up, sleep in it, and then go.
Do people know this? Like, am I the weird one? Or are
we
you?
We just lost everybody. Like, we lost everybody.
I've like literally had a vision of like a little puppy in a tent, and that having also nothing to do with me leaving you.
But yeah,
because I've maybe gone camping like once in my life.
Well, now I'm really glad that I'm amending.
Well, thank
this.
You for correcting it anyhow.
Yes, so. You left me like a coyote up an Arizona flagpole. High.
There you go. Good one.
Yeah, thanks.
I got that visual too.
Yeah.
Good.
I also had a dream last night that you and I were out to dinner and you got up to presumably go to the bathroom and you never came back. And I spent the whole dinner looking for you.
Oh, no. What
so
does
I
that
haven't,
mean?
So I haven't recovered from this yet.
Well, I'm here.
You're here.
Hi. I do tend to pee a lot. But
that's true. You also bought me a shot of whiskey before you went to the bathroom.
That's also
so
normal.
So that made it feel very real.
Yeah, that's pretty. All of that stuff could have been real, except for I will always come back.
Okay, good. What else was it? Oh, question for you. I never know how to address you on this podcast. Because I feel like you have a stage name that we haven't ever really talked
D-Money?
About. D-Money? D-Money. Oh, I didn't even know about that one.
Is that what
one.
You're referring to?
Or Dee Dee.
No, yeah, you could call me Dara.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Dee Dee's awesome. You could call me Dee Dee. You could call me whatever you want.
What is Dee Dee for when you're in Parlor Tricks?
It's whatever. It's whatever.
Okay.
It's a nickname that Parlor Tricks do call me.
Oh, it's
and
like
that I'm known
an
in-band
sort of nickname.
Yeah,
okay.
But it's perfectly fine if you want to call me that as well.
No, I want to have my own name for you.
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't want someone else's.
Diggs is also a nickname that my friends have called me in the past.
Okay, you'll have to write me the list of what people already call you so I can
find my own space. Like a pup tank. You just got to get out there
and just call you something
out,
confusing.
Call me something that I have no idea. And okay. It's just our own private thing.
Perfect. I can't call you Dara because it's very formal for me.
D?
I don't call... Yeah, D.
You say D. You do that.
I do that.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I call most... J-Cats.
Yeah. So in college, there were people who thought I was of some big ethnic origin that had a name in its language that was J-Cats because I was so referred to as J-Cats, they thought I was a first name.
One word. Like that was your name?
Yeah.
Like no
like
vowel,
J-Cats,
just
J-Cats Smith. Yeah. J
That's
or J Cats. I have no.
That was before it was like a handle, or it was a handle.
Before a handle.
Like before a handle.
There so were no handles just, when I was in college.
So what? Why were you known as that?
It's just what my friends called me, and then they would introduce strangers to me that way. Like okay. This is J Cats, and then like people's boyfriends who I'd never met before
That's
were
like pretty rad.
Hey, what's
though.
Up, J Cats?
That's pretty fly.
Yeah,
J Cats.
Then finally, someone was like, "So where does that name come from? I was like, my name's Jesse Katz. They're like, wait, what? Yeah.
That's funny.
If you call me Jesse, I know to respond to it cerebrally, but I think it's like when you call a dog by its name, it doesn't really know its name. It just knows the tone. Like I can say like Alvy and he'll come, but I could also be like Squeegee and he would still come.
It's the right. It's the inflection. Wait, yeah. Are you saying that when I call you Jesse all the time that you're like,
it's not my favorite.
Oh my gosh. This is a revelation right now. Yeah. So J Katz.
J Katz or J.
Or J. I write J.
It was mostly J in college. It was actually, yeah. It was J.
Jess?
I'm good with Jess.
Jessica?
But
is
like
Jessica
I know
your
a
name?
Couple of no. Birth your name certificate, is... Jesse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Welcome to Soul Sisters.
Yeah, good to know these things.
Etymology of our names is the topic today.
But also you had a built-in that when you like when well, I guess AOL, like what was your AOL screen name? It wasn't J-Katz.
It was J DeLesseps because I was DeLesseps. I was obsessed with the movie Shakespeare in Love. And Gwyneth's character's name was Viola DeLesseps. So my first screen name ever was J DeLesseps. And then I went to college.
That is not an easy one.
No. And I went to college and my friend immediately figured out that backwards it's pronounced Special Ed J.
Yes.
So it didn't work out well.
So did you use that? Oh, I thought you were going to say then I changed it.
No. Then I just waited for technology to change.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I have now my handles.
Yeah.
Done and done. Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah. You really took us through the desert on that one.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad to know that you don't prefer Jesse, your actual name.
I've been quietly seething this whole time.
You're like, ugh.
Or you can say my full name, Jesse Katz.
Okay.
But yeah, anyway, moving on to a bigger name. Megan Hilty is on the show today.
Love her.
She's the best.
So much.
Lovely conversation.
What a wonderful woman.
She's cool. She's funny.
Talented as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like a good mom.
Yeah.
Like a fun
she's
mom.
A great talk.
Yeah.
Wonderful conversation.
So let's just roll on into it. Soul Sisters with Megan Hilty.
When me and my husband first met, we had that like obligatory first conversation of like, what's your favorite food? What's your favorite color? And at first I was like, French fries and tater tots.
Oh.
No, it's actually, because I won't eat them without ketchup. So actually, ketchup is my favorite food.
Really? The condiment.
Yeah. He was like, thank you for your honesty. Thank you.
This is going to go well.
And then we ended up getting married and having a baby.
Woo!
Whoa.
Yeah. So that was like a first
lesson
date. Like,
to all you ladies.
Yeah.
Like it was like we're on a date. We're like meeting each other. Not like a more like we're friends and then we
Did
start dating.
On
like,
Tinder?
No. Yeah.
Well, was this on Celebrity Tinder, Megan?
Totally.
Okay.
Tell I'm us about so old it. I don't really know what that is. Like I have a vague understanding of what that is. No, we met at a bar, the old-fashioned way.
Old-fashioned way,
yeah,
nice.
But actually one of our friends introduced us. It wasn't like we were strangers or anything. I mean, we were strangers.
Like across a dark
bar.
There
was a, yeah, yeah. There were like common friends between us.
Okay.
That's nice. Yeah. So where do we start with you?
Well, wait,
I don't know.
Can we just, I kind of, because I was just listening to your album in the car.
Oh, yeah.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Is that the name of it?
Uh-huh.
And I kind of just, since we just started with your happy marriage and baby and that whole life, I'm kind of curious to take it back to that point.
Yeah.
Because it is such a good breakup album.
It is totally a breakup album.
The best breakup album.
If
anyone's going through
about?
A breakup,
oh,
it
thanks.
Is the fucking breakup album.
It is.
And so I'm curious if the idea for like, you were like, it's time for me to make an album. So... Oh, fortunately, I like have emotions going on. Or was it like, I have emotions that I need to put into an album? Like, what is the genesis? What tell us about this whole thing.
So that album came from, I was doing Smash and we were working with Sony and Columbia Records combined. And they approached me about doing this album because they, for some reason, were liking the pop covers that I was doing, which to me was crazy because I was like, that's not what I do. That's way, way out of my like wheelhouse and I'm totally uncomfortable. But at the same time, I was like, that's why I should do this. Like, I should do something that makes me uncomfortable. And when will I ever get this opportunity again?
Cool.
So I ended up going down with my producer, Andy Zula. He lived in Austin, Texas at the time. And so I went and spent some time down there with him. And we were trying to figure out what the album was going to be. And at first, it was going to be songs from the movies. And it was going to be like, you know all those... You know how movies used to have like... amazing soundtracks.
Oh, yeah.
That, and they had those big theme songs, mm-hmm. and they had, like,
totally.
Like, I don't know where those have
like, you would
gone.
Buy the soundtrack
Titanic,
for that
for
one.
Example.
Totally, yeah.
Celine Dion like, had several know? Of those.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was kind
up
of
up close and
of,
personal.
Yeah. What was that? Yes. Yeah.
That's her song.
So we were going to rearrange some of my favorite songs from movies and blah, 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 blah. And that's what it, what we were working on initially.
Okay.
And then Columbia started sending down all of these original tunes and they were like, why don't you just demo these and see how they work? And so many of them we liked. So we were like, okay, let's, we don't want to completely abandon the songs that we love from our original idea.
Yeah.
So the ones that fit with the new songs were all kind of breakup themes.
The ones like, that they were sending you from Sony just happened to be these, like, very...
yes.
Like, very emotional breakup songs.
Yeah. But they're not like...
Well, they're not breakup songs.
They're, no, they're... It's not like sit on your couch with a tub of ice cream and cry about your breakup. It's more like, okay, this chapter of my life is over. What's coming
a
next?
A very specific chapter of my life
very
is over.
Very specific chapter of my life.
Right.
It did so happen that that I had gone through a major breakup the year before and stuff. So, but that wasn't... That wasn't
the okay, that's just coincidence.
It was a total coincidence. Yeah.
Wow. But it probably came out so well because you were channeling stuff.
I guess. But I was dating Brian at the time, so I was totally like on
moved on
to a new thing. So, you know, it was not.
So was that weird or was it like, okay, well, this is my job. Like I sing, these are the songs that I like to sing right now?
Yeah,
or like how did that feel to make that album then?
I don't know, because I wasn't thinking about that particular breakup. Each song, I was thinking, like, Safe and Sound, when I did that, I was thinking about singing to my nephew and stuff like that. Like, they were all, like, personal things, but
sure,
really
yeah.
didn't...
Like, a normal, like, you're an actress, like, you just isolate each thing. It's each thing. It wasn't like, this is an album about my experience. It was, these are songs.
Exactly, yeah.
And...
Yeah, because I didn't write the songs either. So it's not like I'm pouring my heart out into these amazing lyrics or anything.
Are you a songwriter?
No, God, no.
Okay.
Just
an interpreter?
Yes.
And even pop doesn't feel right to you. Like, you feel very...
Now I feel like I kind of have a little bit of a grasp of it, you know, and studio singing and stuff like that. At first, that was really foreign to me. But now it's fun, and I enjoy it. And it is a very different skill set than what... I had before.
Totally.
In my mind, you are like old school, like the romantic notion of a working Broadway actor, like what I imagined everyone who lived in New York was when I was like growing up in the 80s.
That's awesome. That is a great compliment because that is what I
feel like
totally
you've moved beyond that. Like you've had success beyond that at this point. But at one point, that was you, right? You were like the hustler, the auditioner.
I'm still
you just
hustling.
Had a love of theater.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
It's always
did you like I got the impression that you were able to bypass the hustle at this point.
Because oh God, no.
You got Wicked right out of college.
Yes.
Which is like
yeah, that's true.
Insane.
I know. But listen, I took 2 years off before I went to college to see if this is what I really wanted to do. And I did community theater at night, and every awful job you can imagine to support my theater habit. And just to
where
prove
was that?
This, in Southern Oregon.
Okay.
I'm from Seattle. I moved to Southern Oregon to live on my own and see if I could support myself.
Uh-huh.
And my mom was really supportive of that. She was like, go find yourself and figure out what you want to do before you commit 4 years of your life to some program and go into hundreds of thousands of dollars into debt.
I always say that should be the norm. Like, totally. That's what people should do.
Absolutely. But why going to find yourself in Southern Oregon?
It was, I know it sounds really random. I was at a performing arts high school in Seattle, and they had a connection with a community theater down there that I'd gone down to do essentially summer stock.
Okay.
You know? So you were paid a little bit.
Yeah, I was paid a little bit, enough to get by, certainly in Southern Oregon, you know.
Right.
It wasn't like Manhattan or anything. So I could totally support myself there. And by the time I got to college, I knew how to do my laundry, how to feed myself, how to do all of those things so I could actually focus
on what you wanted.
Exactly.
Like, that's the big thing.
Yeah.
You're like learning to do your laundry and sort of like make food
most
while you're like, what am
like
I supposed
28.
To do in my life? Right.
Yeah. So I hustled
a lot.
It was an early hustle.
Yeah, it was an early hustle. I feel like I'm still hustling though. It's like the job is to hustle. It's to figure out
even
what the next
with
thing
all
is.
Of the things that have come keep coming your
absolutely
way. It's still
absolutely yeah.
So by the time that Smash rolled around, because I was thinking about okay, what is their mindset in casting that show? So you have Catherine McPhee, who has this name recognition from Idol and everything she had done since then, and then were they like, for her foil, we need a real Broadway actor.
I guess is so. That, thank yeah God. I mean, yeah. And that show came out of nowhere. I'd moved back to Los Angeles at that point. Uh-huh. And it was like, it was pilot season. And I saw this script and I was like, oh my God, what's happening? That there's a TV show happening that's essentially about like my life. I know these people. I know these situations. Like,
yeah.
Like there's, it's
why
it's
had you
crazy
moved to Los Angeles at that point?
Because 9 to 5, I did a show on Broadway called 9 to 5, the musical. And when it closed pretty sooner than anticipated. And my lease was up at the exact same week. It was Labor Day weekend, and the day after we closed, I packed everything up and went back to Los Angeles because I wanted to see if I could get into the TV scene and voiceovers.
It was
I
a conscious
really wanted
thing
to, yeah.
And then you ended up finding a show that was about Broadway and brought you back here.
And brought me back to New York. Yes.
Because yeah, it's amazing.
It's crazy.
Fate had its hold on you.
Yes.
You were not running away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like your career has this funny way of circling back to you playing actresses.
All the time.
Like,
yeah.
In a way that is a very, like, I don't know who
super
else has
meta
had that.
Yeah,
it's like
meta.
So
very
funny.
Strange. Yeah.
Yeah, like how meta did Smash feel at all times for you?
Like all the time. And because people are always like, oh, that never really happens. And sure, there are things that they had to sensationalize because we were doing a television. Wow. I'm wasted. I'm sorry, guys. I am so wasted this morning.
When you ask for alcohol before it so you could keep
you
your
keep
high right going.
Yeah. no, I just have a 1-year-old, so I never sleep. So they had to sensationalize
right
things because we
like the amount of times Angelica Houston threw her drink in her ex-husband's face was a little exaggerated
yeah
for TV.
Just a little bit.
Twice
sure, yeah
happens in real life.
I only do it twice tops yeah, exactly to one person. Yeah. More than
come
that,
on
that only happens in TV. But yeah, but a lot of that, yeah, that's it happens.
Yeah.
You have a lot of really big personalities.
And they cast, in addition to you, a lot of working Broadway actors because
yeah
theater friends of mine in New York would constantly be like, oh, that guy, I used to do shows with him. Or like, he's
totally
a waiter at a like Broadway bar that I go to all the time.
Yeah, it would have been really easy for them to just hire pretty faces and
yeah
pretending, not that they weren't hiring pretty faces by having
pretty and talented.
Yeah, but these are actually people that are working in the Broadway community. And
yeah
and that's a real testament to Bob Greenblatt at NBC and Neil Maron and Craig Zaden,
yeah,
two of our producers. And most of the creative team are from Broadway, so they wanted to hire people that they knew could do this stuff.
Yeah, so did you know a lot of your co-stars from theater?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was like every day mm-hmm new friends were coming on set.
Awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Were you able to recommend people? Did you have
I mean,
that power?
I didn't have any kind of power. I didn't have any, you know, and nor did I want to, you
uh-huh
know, I was just so grateful to have that job. It was like,
so you saw the script, you were aware of the script before it came to you?
Not really. My manager was like, you need to read this, you know, and I saw the breakdown of the character and it said that she was a triple threat. You know, she'd been in the ensemble for 10 years and I was like, oh, this person's a better performer than I am. Like in the business, I am what you would call a singer who quote unquote moves well instead of like a singer
dancer.
Yeah. So, so I saw that she was a dancer and I was like, oh, I can't go to all these dance calls. I will literally fall on my face and make a fool out of myself in front of these fancy people. No, thank you. I think I'll just wait until a nice guest star role comes along.
Was Glee on at this point?
It was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. And luckily,
like
my manager was like, "Just go in an audition and see
yeah
what happens." And,
so you were always going to audition for Ivy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Had they, was Catherine attached to it?
No, she was auditioning at the same time. Okay. So,
got it. Did you guys have to do like a chemistry kind of thing together?
No.
No. Okay.
Yeah. No, we didn't. Yeah.
Or an anti-chemistry or whatever. Anti-chemistry. Those characters.
We rarely had stuff to do together.
That's
too
true.
Like
that's true.
That was the strange thing, especially in season two. We like never saw each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had like one or two killer numbers together.
Yeah, we had some really fun numbers together, but for the most part, we didn't see each other.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel like it's such a testament to your acting, though, that by the end, I was so Team Ivy.
Yes!
I was like, that is our girl.
Yay!
Because you were not set up that way in the pilot.
No.
No.
No, I was...
Is it, like, equally painted? Like, you could be... I mean, Ivy's not the...
You're rooting for the Midwestern girl who's trying to break into the business.
Yeah, I did some pretty questionable things.
That's what I
to move ahead.
Thought.
So, but I think as the show went on, you know, the writing kind of exposed that she was a human being, you know, and just she had ambition and she was just willing to do a little bit more to get what she wanted.
Yeah,
you know, and once you see that people are human and they're flawed
exactly.
and stuff, it's much more easy to identify with them.
Yeah.
Right. Even when they're doing questionable things.
I don't want to dwell in negative about it because I love the show very deeply,
sure.
as did my mother and grandmother and everybody in the world. But when did it feel for you like it was starting to unravel a little bit just in terms of the life expectancy it was going to have?
I don't know because... You know, all of that stuff is so out of your control.
Yeah.
It's really hard. You can hear rumblings about anything as much as you want, but you really have no idea what's actually happening.
Right.
And we had so much fun on set that it kind of didn't matter.
Yeah.
And we knew that, like, kind of towards the end of season two, that they were trying to wrap it up so that in case we didn't come back,
uh-huh.
people would feel satisfied with the ending.
Right.
You know, like there was obviously room for it to keep going,
mm-hmm.
but they wanted to make sure that there were things tied up nicely.
Yeah. And it did feel that way.
Yeah. And I think they did a really good job of doing that. But
so as you were rehearsing and filming those final episodes, you weren't aware, you didn't know one way or the other if it was coming back?
No, we didn't know. I was certainly preparing for it,
mm-hmm.
but I do that with every job.
Yeah.
Like right. with 9 to 5, like
right.
that was supposed to run for a long time
and
it had like 4 months on Broadway, if that.
Yeah.
You just never know. And it brings me back to we are always hustling. We are always
right.
trying to figure
right.
out what the next thing is.
Totally. Does it get, I mean, do you get desensitized? Or, I mean, maybe not yet, but do you feel yourself like growing a thicker skin, being able to do that more? Like,
I think so.
I know this is the reality of it, so
yeah.
I'm not going to get as upset. I mean, I remember like doing musical theater as a kid in community theater, I would like weep for
oh, yeah.
days about it being over. And you know that's going to be over
you
at the end of the summer.
Over,
you know that's ending, but you become a family and then it's not even, you're not even making money yet. It's not even about that. It's just about the experience. And so, I mean, you become so attached to these things. I wonder how long it takes for it to get easier, or if it does get easier.
Yeah, you do. You create these intense bonds with people because you're out on stage and your adrenaline is pumping and
mm-hmm.
you're depending on each other, you know, to get through these, you know, very intense experiences. And then it's over and you go through a mourning period.
Right, right.
And yeah, the same, it still happens. But I think I have developed a thicker skin and realizing that I have to keep looking forward to the next thing instead of,
totally.
You know, dwelling on the fact that the thing that I just worked on is over. It was really hard when Smash was over, though. It still is. I miss that job every day. It was my dream job.
Yeah,
dream job.
Everything I ever wanted in one, seriously.
Insane.
It's insane.
You were performing Broadway on television.
Yeah.
Like, weekly.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
In
a Spielberg project.
In a Spielberg project.
Insane. With
Ooh.
All of my idols. But I was with Bernadette Peters.
Yes.
You know, like,
God.
She was playing my mother. Like,
that's crazy.
I still can't. I'm
like, how
tell
is she?
Us all
tell
about
us
those.
Bernadette.
Yes, tell
I
us.
Need to know.
I... I'm still such an idiot around her. She is like, she is the nicest, most warm and caring
really?
And supportive person.
Okay, good.
And I can't act like a normal human being around her.
Still.
I still can't. And yeah, I just.
She's probably in what, the top like five
Broadway.
Reigning Broadway. Royalty.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a reason why. I mean, on top of her talent, she's insanely supportive and kind.
That's
and
so
generous.
Nice.
And like,
but then that was probably meta for her because she was playing also a Broadway actress.
Yeah.
Whose daughter was taking the spotlight from her.
Why is that?
And she's, well, it's just because, you know, she's co-starring with Megan Hilty in this show and like how, I mean, not that her career is by any means over.
God, no. Yeah.
But I would just think, I don't know, for all of you, it probably brings up a lot of feelings and self-reflection and
totally.
It's like
Absolutely.
A weird funhouse mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It totally was.
So wild.
Yeah. So then you guys did a reunion show last year, right?
Yeah.
You did Bombshell, which I'm like devastated I couldn't attend.
Why
it's the
was
coolest
it?
Thing in the world.
Two nights only or one night only. Why?
They couldn't get us all in one room for more than that. Like, to be very honest, like everybody's
scheduling
gone off to do their own thing. And once they kind of realized that, they're like, oh, we really just need to make this a one night only, like really special. And we couldn't. We didn't even have time to rehearse for like camera blocking or anything if we were to record it. Because that's a whole other process. Because everybody's like, well, why didn't you just film it?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, there's a lot that goes into that. Because you have to stage it for the camera. And those cameras would have blocked all of those people that paid thousands and thousands of dollars
really?
To be there.
Yeah.
You know, and that would have been more rehearsal time, more all of that. Like, it just... logistically, it couldn't
but
happen.
But what a nice button to put on that whole experience for you guys, probably, to see all those people turn out, for that to be the hottest ticket in town after the show had been canceled.
Yeah, it was really wonderful. I have never experienced anything like that. The energy coming from that audience, it was...
Yeah, because you're doing a TV show, so you don't have that audience interaction at all.
No, and it was so nice after, you know, all of the negative things that people said, especially the people from the Broadway community. Like, you know,
was there that?
It was strange how...
It got a little cannibalistic.
It did. It was very odd
to
be so against a show that was so pro-theater.
And, what was their beef?
Oh, gosh. I this is a whole nother show. Okay. But,
that's one other thing. Although, but let me try to explain, even from my point of view, I felt there was some personal disappointment just because it's like... This show is everything that we could ever want. Like when that pilot came out, it was like, holy shit, this is the mother load. This is amazing. And then for it to go through the problems it went through and not turn out and to only last two seasons felt a little bit like, shit, like when are we going to get another chance to have
show
like that?
I know.
It just felt like there was a lot riding on it to like get it right and be a huge success.
Yeah.
I mean, was it the way, the approach? Like, was it content? Like, what was the
criticism?
I think inherently anything, like, when you...
Like a
when you
lawyer
have,
show, and lawyers are like, that's not...
But how many lawyers are sitting around saying that? You know what I mean? Like, how many
they
doctors
are? They're
are
just
like,
not, like, on Twitter.
But they're not, like, protesting the show and, like,
right.
and
I think
saying
it just
nasty
meant a lot.
Things online.
Expectations just never would have been met.
Never.
Yeah.
Ever, ever.
Yeah.
So...
That's right.
Yeah, so that
right.
was unfortunate. But so, after all of that... And you know, going through the mourning process of, you know, not doing the show anymore and then having that kind of amazing response and people all over the world came to see
it. So basically what you got to do was put on the musical that you were
Bombshell.
Yeah.
That was
in
the
show.
Focus of the show.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one of a kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah.
Was there any hit parade?
That's like the coolest thing.
Is that what it's called? No, what's it called? On hit parade.
Hit parade.
What's the name of the other show?
The Hit List.
Smash Hit List.
There was nothing from Hit List. They had another show at another venue.
They did.
Like, I I think like 6 months later.
Oh,
but
that's nice.
Yeah.
So do you know if Bombshell is actually going to be made into a show?
I have no idea.
Is it fleshed out?
I have no idea. I keep reading that that's going to happen, but
allegedly that was the intention. I remember the first stories ever written about Smash before it came out was that they're going to do this show. Spielberg would ultimately like to take the show within the show to Broadway.
That was the original intent when he brought this idea to Showtime.
Brilliant.
Bob Greenblatt at Showtime.
To Showtime.
Yeah. And then,
that's right. That's the other interesting trivia.
Yeah,
very interesting.
Because Bob Greenblatt was the head of Showtime, and then he moved to NBC and brought that with him.
Oh, that would have been a
probably would have been a different show.
Yeah, but that makes sense that it would have the evolution to go to Broadway.
Yeah.
The only not to say that it won't,
the only problem is that to make a Broadway show, it actually takes years and years and
yes,
years.
Yes, right.
You know, like it. So it would take much longer than doing a season of a television show.
But the songs are so good. I mean, that was the other thing about Smash. Those songs are legitimately incredible. Amazing.
Is that song that Let Your Life Start? Is that Bombshell or
Bombshell.
That's Bombshell.
Yeah, it's written by Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, the dream team music writers of the century. I mean, like
they've done Broadway.
They did Hairspray. Okay. They did Catch Me If You Can't. They've done a million
and
things.
And I think Bombshell is the best thing they've ever done.
I mean, I haven't heard a song like that on Broadway in a long, like since
long
Wicked.
Time.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I haven't been bowled over by like what the actress is being asked to do vocally in like since Wicked.
Yeah.
It's like insane.
Yeah. It's
and it's old school, like History Is Made at Night. Fucking love that song.
Isn't that
it's,
a great
it's like such
song?
A throwback song. That was probably my favorite number in the whole show.
I love, people always say they don't make them like they used to. And I'm like, Mark and Scott do.
Yeah,
but they have a whole fresh approach to it. Like they're new songs, but they all feel nostalgic for some reason.
Yes,
like they all feel like classics instantly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, then, I mean, we got to just say it's going to be a matter of time. I mean, if it's like 10-year anniversary, like, you know, it's going to be, it's going to come back around because if it's this good,
the music is amazing. So hopefully they'll find somebody to write a book that matches the music and brings it all together. And you know,
and
I
then
hope
who
they
plays
do.
Marilyn? Yeah. Is it you?
I'm gonna be way too old by the time it actually happens.
How old is Marilyn supposed to be in Bombshell?
I don't know. It spans.
It's a whole. Yeah,
I don't know. I
you can play old Marilyn.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, I can play her by the
and
end.
Your daughter can play young Marilyn.
How old is she?
36, I believe.
Okay.
I believe. Yeah.
And then you played Marilyn again? Was Gentlemen in Love Blondes?
Oh, I did Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, but...
that's not Marilyn.
Marilyn did
Marilyn
that in
role.
The movie.
Okay.
And Carol Channing originated it years before that on Broadway, which are two very different performers.
Yeah.
I tried to find some place in the middle.
Yes, and I read that you did the perfect... sort of blend. You did your own. You found your own.
Sweet spot.
This reviewer compared Megan to Carol and Marilyn, and it was just a really phenomenal,
very
write-up.
Nice of them.
Yeah, it was
very
like
nice
amazing that you just found the humanity and like the realness and brought your own take to it. And
that's
really wonderful.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's very nice of them to say.
Because in such a like a character that's been played by such polar opposites, kind of.
Yeah,
and. I mean, I don't know how well known the story is.
I don't know either. I think people are much more familiar with the movie, which is different from the stage production.
Mm-hmm.
And people are really familiar with Marilyn Monroe's version of Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, which in the movie makes it a very different thing from the stage. On stage, it's a very female empowering you know,
the song
people,
is?
Yeah, people don't realize. They think, oh, it's just about a gold digger.
Right.
And it's like, no. You don't understand. The whole play, you think she's this, like, dumb blonde that doesn't know what she's doing. And finally, she comes out and she speaks to the audience and she's essentially saying, no, I'm playing everybody. This is the only way in this time for women to take care of themselves. So, yeah, I'm gonna use this guy for this thing and this guy for this thing because this is the only way I can take care of myself.
Yeah.
So the opposite.
Cool. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's
and I mean,
I'm
taken alone when people sing that song just as a standalone song, you don't have that context.
You
so
don't.
So it's not thought of in that way.
Yeah. So you think it's just a gold digger song. But
diamonds.
It is.
Like, it's like.
Yeah. She comes out and very, like, sings it in a different voice, in a different register from everything else. So that means that there's...
Carol Channing did, or just the character
does?
That's
how it's written. It's just in a different register, so it's deeper, so it's more grounded, and it's, so you feel like... Oh, she's actually, this is actually who she is.
Right.
Wow. You know, it's
a revealing moment as opposed to.
Yeah. I think Marilyn Monroe's divisive in the feminist community in general. Like the way that people feel about her.
I would probably tend to agree. In the beginning, when I didn't know anything about her, I thought it was very cliche for blondes to love Marilyn Monroe. So I was like, oh, she's not my girl. You know, like I don't, in quiet protest. I was like, well, I'm a blonde that like, just because she's blonde doesn't mean just all the glamour and all that. But then when I actually started finding out about her when I was reading a biography on Arthur Miller and then reading about their marriage and what happened with them. And I was like, oh my God, this woman has gone through so much. And then I was interested in her life story. And
that's what brings people around when they learn about her personally.
Yeah. She was very smart and had a very tumultuous life and relationship with her mother. And she's a fascinating woman. And I think you're right. I think people at first glance think that, you know, she's not good for the feminist movement and stuff. But you learn more about her and... I think you change your tune.
Yeah, for sure. So who, you're very old soul, old school. Who turned you on when you were growing up as an artist that kind of like lit you up in this way?
My parents exposed me to a lot of different singers and music when I was little. My mom read this article saying that if you're tone deaf, don't sing to your kids because then they'll be tone deaf too. So she like refused to sing to me.
Is that true?
I have no idea.
Is she tone deaf?
She says she is. I still have never heard her sing.
She really took that to
she
heart.
She really took it to... It was
she never spoke after that.
And this was a long time ago. This was a Japanese study that she read up on. And she was like, okay, I'm never going to sing to her. And so she played me all kinds of music. Like the Manhattan Transfer. I listened to like the Music Man. Ella Fitzgerald still is one of my favorite singers. Rosemary Clooney, Dolly Parton, Whitney Houston was my idol growing up. I wanted to be her. That didn't work out.
Is anyone in your family musical?
Not really.
Yeah.
My dad can sing. Like he sings in the house and
but you're
stuff.
Not following in a tradition.
No, I'm kind of
an anomaly.
The weirdo.
So did you grow up doing like performing in the house? Like were you like what?
Kind of. I always wanted to like I was in youth theaters and I was gonna be an opera singer. Like that's what I wanted to do. Once I started singing with a voice teacher, she was like, you need to train classically and
is that what you wanted to do or is that the way
I
in
did.
For training?
I fell in love. I went to everything that the Seattle Opera did. I went to opera camp with the San Francisco Opera
Company. Not musical theater camp, opera camp.
No, opera camp. Yeah.
What exact kind of nerd was Megan Hilty as a child?
Theater or opera? Tells you a lot about my childhood and teenage years. Yeah. Yeah.
Opera camp must be very different.
Yeah.
From musical theater.
It was very different.
Is it the
We had like ballet every morning. We had and we were in San Francisco. We were living with host families and stuff and like
so you're like 15, 16?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And different opera singers would come and talk to us and stuff. And we'd put on this big performance at the end where we each had an aria that we all performed and
Wow. Well, that kind of vocal training is certainly like the greatest thing for any singer,
absolutely.
You know, so you came from that.
Yeah.
But it makes sense then that you would sort of be out of high school and say to yourself, well, which way? Because you were in performing arts high school too?
Yeah. And once I went to that camp, I was like, I think musical theater is more appropriate for me because all of these people would come and talk to us and say, well, you're really not going to work until you're in your 30s, you know, and your voice is actually matured and all of these things. And I was just
like,
oh, is
that how it works?
And the whole lifestyle, I was like, I have a deep respect for opera singers. They're like the Olympians of
like more so than Broadway singers.
Well, yeah, because their whole job is to rehearse, train, and then the performances are limited. They're very limited.
You mean number of years that you can? What do you mean?
Well, like you're training for a role that you're going to do a couple like a year or two down the road, and then you only have handful of shows, you know. So they're, I feel like they're Olympic athletes in that way. You know, they're training, training, training. And I didn't want to train that much. So I have a deep respect for what they do. And I still secretly want to be one. I never will be, but like it's one of those secret.
Maybe we'll get a TV show.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'll play one on
a movie.
TV. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so what was the focus at the high school?
Musical theater. Yeah, they didn't have an option for like classical stuff. So
did you ever think about doing movies at that point? Like,
never.
What kind of actor did you want to be?
Never. No, that was never. It was always Broadway. It was always like that's the goal.
Yeah.
And
when did you see your first Broadway show?
Well, I saw a touring company. Oh, like in New York.
Tell us both.
Okay, I saw a touring company come through Seattle of Jekyll and Hyde.
Okay.
And I
was
like,
oh my God.
I was like,
nobody knows that show, I feel. It was so good.
It was so great.
So good.
And I sat in the audience and I was so excited and I was like, I want to make people feel like this. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah. Someone like you?
Yeah, and amazing. All of the songs are incredible. In eighth grade, we had a New York trip to New York. Of course, that's where the New York trip would be. Would be, wow, to New York City. Wow, okay, good morning, everyone.
To Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, to Poughkeepsie. And we saw Beauty and the Beast. And that was my first Broadway show that I ever saw.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of that production?
Loved it.
Yeah.
It was cold. I remember being very cold in the theater.
In the theater?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. But I remember the show being great.
It's funny to see Disney movies on Broadway.
I know,
it
right?
It is.
It's
like, I don't know, it's weird. I think it's a weird experience sometimes.
Yeah. I haven't seen Lion King.
It kind of works.
I've never seen Lion King.
Well, it's just because you're so attached to them.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like you know them so well. So to see them in a different way.
Right.
Yeah. It is a little different.
Yeah.
So was the musical theater bug like by those 2 years that you were, you know, waitressing or doing whatever you were doing? I just assumed when you said I was doing lots of weird odd jobs, I just assumed waitress. I don't know.
Of course. Okay. I did every job in the restaurant except cooking. Nobody wants me to do that. I did all of those things.
And then you applied to Carnegie Mellon. And did you apply to lots of different programs, or was it like
Carnegie Mellon and Boston Conservatory, and that was it?
Boston Conservatory, yes, okay, which is musical theater, heavy too.
Yeah.
Is Carnegie Mellon classical and like what's the vibe at Carnegie Mellon for theater?
It is a conservatory program, so it is very intense. Musical theater is a double major, so you don't take any other classes. You take like English and computer class, you know, and that's it outside of the performing arts college. But other than that,
it's a double major because it's music and theater.
Because you're doing, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
You're
doing
being
everything
trained.
The actors do, plus all of the music training. And,
got it.
Yeah. And dancing and all of that stuff.
What was the environment like there? Was it like a supportive, like nice community, or was it like very strict and sort of?
Anytime you're in a bubble like that, in very close quarters with the same people for a long period of time, and you're up for roles together and stuff like that, you know, it can be tough. And I always say that the best training that I got from that school was how to deal with those politics, because they're everywhere. But you're in a little hothouse of them there. And at that age, you know, everybody's hormones are raging, and, you know, like you're just... you're very emotional about everything. So it's a lot. It's a lot. I almost left about 20 times.
Really?
Yeah. But just because I was like, I don't need to do this. I've lived on my own.
Did you have other thoughts of other things that you would do aside from music and aside from theater? Or was it, I could do something else within?
I was always like, I need to do something in the arts. I don't know what it is, but I have to be a part of it, whether it's on stage or off, whatever.
Were you going to auditions while you were in school?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you're just focused on that.
That was one of the really great things about going to school in Pittsburgh, too, is that we were so far away. Not so far away, but far enough away.
It's not like you would just hop on a bus to come to the city to audition for something.
Right? Yeah.
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 Did you graduate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 4 years.
I made it. I did it. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you have any really outstanding or fun roles while you were there?
Yeah. I played Queenie in The Wild Party, the Lacusa version of The Wild Party, which was awesome. Everything else, I kind of played the mom or like, so, well, because I had like a real person's body instead of like a rail thin dancer, you know, so like. So I played people's like, moms or like or like a hooker with a heart of gold or, you know, like things like that, because I actually had like
those are 75% of the roles for women. So.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just, so,
yeah. So like, we'll have Megan play the mom again. But when I was a senior we did Wild Party, I actually got to.
I don't know that
play
one.
Queenie. Oh, yeah. It's awesome. It's based on this awesome poem about people throwing a party during, when alcohol is not
prohibition.
Prohibition, yeah. Fun. And it just spirals out of control.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's dark.
Sounds
yeah.
like a show or a movie,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
So you graduated, and you're like, I'm going to the city. Here we go.
Well, yeah, we did our showcase in New York a couple months before we graduated. So I actually booked Wicked before I graduated.
So explain the showcase. What does that mean exactly?
A showcase is like we would come to New York and we'd all prepare a little bit of a song and a little bit of a monologue, and we all did it in as a group, and everybody in the audience were either casting directors, agents, managers, you know, people
that right
looking
there. That's just like
no pressure, no pressure.
Yeah,
no pressure.
But that's why people, I mean, go to these programs because they have these opportunities where people will actually see you at the end of them.
So what did you perform at the showcase?
I did I Can Cook Too. I can cook too on top of the rest. My Stevens is the best of the town. It's all of these like sexual innuendos. And I did a snippet of that and a little scene with one of my best friends from school. His name's Aaron Staten. He went on to do Mad Men and he's
awesome.
Big fancy guy out in LA. and we did a scene from a new play that one of the playwrights at CMU wrote.
Cool.
Yeah.
So who was there that cast you in Wicked?
Craig Burns was there from Bernie Telsey's office. Okay. Who they cast like everything in New York. And well, not everything, but mostly everything. and they actually called me in for another show.
Did you meet them? Did you shake hands and know that, oh, there's like some interest happening, or did you just go home not knowing?
Well, I was actually supposed to, I was getting ready to do, they put me through the ringer for all of the auditions for Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh.
And
on Broadway?
Yeah, for the tour, the national tour. They were, doing it on Broadway at the time and they were about to do the national tour. And, got my first agents because of it and stuff. It was very exciting to negotiate contracts and stuff. Long story short, it fell through. And I think Bernie Telsey's office felt sad for me. And so they're like, well, we're doing the Kristen Chenoweth replacement auditions for Wicked. Why don't you come back to New York? I was still in school. And they were like, well, why don't you come back, see the show, and audition for us the next day.
Had you seen it?
No. Oh, and I'd been hearing all about it because it had just opened the October before. And I came to New York by myself. I saw the show.
Did you like listen ahead of time to the music?
Yeah. And it was, I was like, this is insane. And I remember weeping at intermission going, nobody can do this. Nobody can do this after either of them. Like, what am I doing here? This
you
is
were the
insane.
Kristen Chenoweth replacement.
No, I was not the Kristen Chenoweth replacement, but I was there for the audition.
Okay.
And I went in for the audition the next day. I was like panicking. I was like, how am I going to do this? Like, I'm not as funny or charming or as amazing as Kristen Chenoweth. What am I going to do? So I was like, well, I just have to go in here and make it my own. Maybe I can make this funny or this funny or I don't know. I went in and it was like the final round of callbacks. Joe Mantello, the director, was there. Stephen Schwartz was there. Winnie Holtzman, all of the producers, everybody was there. And I did things from the show, and they saw me for like 10 minutes, and I left. And my new agents called, and they were like, well, they say that they want to put you on the show. And I was like, I've heard that before, so, you know, I won't hold my breath till that happens. Mm-hmm. And then
how did you...
And then I got the call saying that I was going to be the standby for the Kristen Chenoweth replacement,
okay.
who was Jennifer Laura Thompson.
Does that mean you learn ensemble parts and then you perform?
The understudies are in the ensemble. Standbys, you are literally standing by. You are the first
in
to go on.
In case you twist your ankle and then you're just literally gone.
In case of an emergency or if you're the first to go on for vacations or plan days off or anything.
Before the understudy.
Wait, before the understudy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, standbys are literally there in case of an emergency.
How do you keep it fresh when you're not the one who's performing every night?
It's terrifying. It is the hardest
like
job.
How much
it
rehearsal is, do you get?
Right.
I got a lot, but it wasn't with a lot of people. It was like with the stage manager or with the, you know.
And do you just keep rehearsing throughout?
Yeah,
so that
like luckily in the Gershwin Theater, they had a rehearsal studio like above the theater and you can listen to the show. And so me and the other standby would run around and do the show while we were listening to the show. Cause it's very taboo to do that in front of other people. Like,
sure.
Like that should
have
been
in front of other actors or
like, people do that in the wings
while
the show is going on.
Really?
It is very, very tacky, very bad behavior. Yeah. That if Smash would have continued, you would have
that
would have
been written
like
in.
That.
Yeah.
That's like, it's a big no-no.
I can see
that,
yeah.
Yeah. But people do it.
Wow.
And so we went upstairs where nobody could see us or hear us or anything, and we would just go through the show.
Oh, my goodness.
You know.
So when does the understudy... Where does that come in? Like if the standby is also out?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I mean, it's all insurance and you need to cover yourself.
It's like presidential. You never know.
Exactly. It makes me think of like the vice president. Yeah. Like you're either like doing nothing.
And people generally
hire. So the understudy is like the speaker of the house. You're like the vice president.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. I'm a heartbeat away from Glinda at any given point.
So you got that. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then took over when Jennifer Laura Thompson left.
Did it ever have to happen that you had to step in while she was...
The first time I went on, I had 2 hours notice and...
like, take us into that moment.
Yeah, well, it was insane.
Were you like at home having lunch?
It was my Broadway debut.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And it was
Could you invite anybody?
Yeah, I had time to invite people and they had house seats and I could get friends in there. And it was opposite Idina Menzel, who had just won her Tony for that role. And I remember I was sitting in Jennifer's dressing room, getting ready, panicking, you know. And Idina walked in, and she was like, "Is there anything you want to talk about or go through?" And I was like, "What are we doing? I don't know." And she was so cool. She came up and she was like, "You know what? Let's just go out there and make the show our own tonight."
Aww. Awesome.
And we did. And like, she made it so that I could breathe, you know, and like, and really enjoy the night. And and by the end, when we sang For Good, we were both like,
God, like, do you even remember that performance?
Barely,
or just blackout.
I remember the end. I remember the end. But I remember at several points going, Megan, just stop and breathe and like, and really take this in. This is like
your Broadway debut.
This is your Broadway debut. Wow. Yeah.
How long had the show been running at that point?
By the time I went on, it was about a year.
Okay, so it's still pretty new.
Yeah.
The new hot thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Wow. Okay, and then you took over how long after that?
About, like, 8 months after that. Like, it was the next summer that I took over.
Were there, like,
Jennifer left.
New rehearsal periods for you, or was it like, you already know it, so, like, you're in? It's
Yeah, we didn't really. We had another big rehearsal process when Eden Espinosa took over, when she came in, and that was, like, halfway through my run on Broadway.
Okay.
And then we had a big, like, cleanup session where Joe Mantello, the director, came back and worked with everybody and stuff. And then they essentially took that company out to Los Angeles.
Okay.
And that's when everything changed. I was, like... I kind of went kicking and screaming out to LA because I was like, I'm a New Yorker and I hate LA because I'm a New Yorker and that's what we do and stuff. And everybody's going to be so fake out there. I don't understand where that mentality comes from because, like...
I think it's part of wanting to become a New Yorker, because you weren't a New Yorker by birth. Yeah. So it's like part of your new inherited identity.
Yeah.
Like, I really fucking love New York and I hate it out there.
Exactly.
It's garbage.
Even though I've never
Everything
really
Woody
been
Allen
there.
Said is right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and, but I fell in love with Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then I started.
But you were doing Wicked there. Is
yeah.
That,
okay. Yeah. We had a sit down company out there. And I was out there for about 2 years. And that's when I started doing like little TV things. And I was like, Oh,
that really,
really
awakened.
Cool. Yeah, this is cool. They're paying me and they're feeding me and they're, oh my God. And then I started thinking about like all of the people's careers that I wanted to emulate.
Mm-hmm. Like.
And like Bernadette Peters,
right.
You know, Audra McDonald, you know, all of the greats. I was just like, and I started thinking about their careers and I was like, okay, they seem to have cracked the code on longevity in this business. And that is to diversify what you're doing. And anything you do in television is only going to help your career in theater and everything else.
And if a project comes along that in which you don't sing, you don't play an actress, but like you don't sing, that's fine for you for a time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it just, it takes people out from, away from pigeonholing you into one thing.
How was it singing seven nights a week?
Yeah, seven nights a week. Eight shows a week.
How was that on your voice?
It's insane.
Like,
there is nothing harder than 8 shows a week. You're an athlete. Like, it is a 24-hour job. Even though you only have the show at night, you are resting up for it. You have to you have it constantly in the back of your mind that you have to save energy and all of that for your job at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you take lessons?
Yeah.
Throughout that period?
Yeah, I did.
So were you having fun when you first moved to New York, or you just kind of walked into this really intense job?
It was the scariest thing I've ever had to do.
Yeah. But you were able to find time to relax and enjoy the city and be a 20-something in New York?
Yeah, but in the beginning, it was terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't want to blow that.
I didn't want to blow the opportunity. I didn't want to, I was... But I also didn't want to be one of those people that was too precious about their voice.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big reason why I didn't want to do opera. I didn't want everything to revolve around that. And I'm not putting that down at all. I totally respect it. But for me, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
No, it's so interesting to like make that a conscious choice. I think is really cool. It's like you could live one way and go down a path that would maybe be taken because of that, or maybe not, you know, it's like, it's cool because that does have to be kind of a choice
in
a way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
With a voice, with anything.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about the way that Broadway has changed these days, where a lot of these shows are anchored by big celebrity names?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of focus on that. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that changes the way that you feel like you should approach your career versus somebody like a Bernadette Peters, and that maybe it's more important now to get your bona fides in film and TV. Like, probably Smash really helped you be able to then
absolutely
go back to Broadway, because they need that name. They think they need that name.
To be very honest, that's why I moved back to Los Angeles after 9 to 5 closed. But while I was doing 9 to 5, again, hustling, I had a job, but I was doing all kinds of readings and workshops to, you know, anchor a future job. And I got all of these comments saying, oh, you're great. You're so great. We just need a star in this
role.
Wait,
it was 9 to 5 was before Smash?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It was 2 years before Smash.
By the way, did you get to meet Dolly?
Oh God. Yeah. She wrote all
the music,
and I did all the readings and workshops of 9 to 5. So even though it was a limited engagement, I worked with her for several years on the actual show.
And you were
show.
Playing
She's
her role?
Amazing. Yeah, in front of her.
Oh my God.
Every day. Yeah. And she couldn't have been lovelier
Yay,
about it.
That's
like
what
she
I hear.
She is everything you want her to be.
Oh my God.
Everything positive you've ever heard of her is
She's
true.
A dream. She's
that.
An angel. Oh,
yeah.
So it sounds like most of your heroes that you've met so far have lived up to your hopes. Or
most of them.
Okay.
Most.
Any surprises you can share?
Nope.
I won't share.
Okay.
But so. I will say that that old saying of don't ever meet your heroes does not apply to
awesome.
Dolly Parton.
Okay,
awesome.
Yeah. Good.
Okay, I interrupted you though. So you're doing 9 to 5
And
oh yeah, I would do readings and workshops of new shows, and they'd be like, "You're great, you're so great. We honestly need to put a star in here so that we can sell tickets," which is completely understandable.
Yeah,
that is the way it is that it's going. It is, and so totally I thought now. To myself, I can sit around here and I can cry about it and I can complain about it, or I can go out to Los Angeles and like become the person that they want to hire.
I didn't hate. You're like, I didn't hate it.
No.
I liked it.
And I love Los Angeles. So I also was a little burnt out by how 9 to 5 ended and was kind of treated within the New York community. And I was like, if I stay here, people are going to smell my frustration and my,
so
you know.
Smart. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go where I'm happy and just figure out this other new part of my career.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You like... just think back to that moment where you're like, yeah, I'm going to do that, and like where it led. You know, it's just like so crazy.
It's insane. It
like
was
how
a
soon
major
after
gamble.
You moved,
yeah, I
did you get smashed?
Well, it was a 2 years, and okay. I spent those 2 years like really like busting down doors in the voiceover world and in television. And I kept doing these little spots in TV shows and learning how that, because it's a whole different thing. You know, it's a whole different approach. And I mean, I don't want to say technique. I'm rolling my eyes as I'm saying it because it's kind of obnoxious, but it is, it's a whole different animal.
Right.
So I spent those years like learning and trying to just get into television.
Yeah. Would you do one of those live televised musicals?
I would love to. Yeah. I would that. Oh my God. I just
doesn't
think,
it make you nervous though? They can really go either way.
The thing about them though, it feels none of they never cast Broadway actors. They never cast like theater
or they'll
actors.
They'll cast them in a lesser role.
Okay. Yeah.
But I,
that makes me so nervous because I feel like they've never done theater, like live theater.
Hear
it feels.
Me out on this. Like they have to do it. Just like what I was saying, what's happening with Broadway, to get people to watch,
right?
They have to have these. Like,
I appreciate that. It's
yeah,
just, it's so.
And it's just part of the part of the gig. And eventually, when people have caught on to it, it's becoming really cool. And all of these different networks are now doing them. It's so exciting that they're. I mean, eventually they're going to start taking chances on
what is
known.
The, I mean, it reminds me of how they did Bombshell, and it was just like one night and I'm like, well, give me more or film it or something. And it's like the amount of effort and energy and like all of the stuff that goes into that for that one thing. It's like astounding. I mean, I'm not critical of it. It's just like, it's astounding.
Yeah. And they're figuring it out. Like they're each one, they're learning from the past ones, and each one it's like, okay, we can film this and we can sell this afterwards and people can rewatch it over and over and
that's
over again and stuff.
Yeah.
And,
do you have a dream show that you would like to be in?
Yes. It's, I want to be in Sweeney Todd and I want to play Mrs. Lovett. Ooh, I have a little while before I can do that. But that is like
that's
the
good.
Ultimate
that's a good one to work
that's
up to.
Favorite musical. And one day I want to do it.
Yeah. Probably not for TV. I don't see them doing that one anytime soon.
But
it's not really like the 8 p.m. family.
Oh my God, like, what's his name? Johnny Depp's director.
Tim Burton. Yeah, Tim Burton.
No.
Yeah.
He did this.
He did it.
Yeah.
Tim Burton, yeah.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah. It'd be awesome.
Imagine.
I was asked by a colleague at the Hollywood Reporter to ask you what your biggest audience pet peeve is when you're on stage, besides cell phones.
Oh, man. Besides cell phones.
Like, has anything ever really thrown you?
Yeah,
sleeping.
Go, fine. You paid your ticket. I don't care. Take an expensive nap. I don't care.
Yes,
that doesn't bother me. I guess people talking back.
Yeah,
it's very strange how people feel like they can do that. That they're allowed to like interrupt the show.
Yeah,
and that somehow the show is about them. And people don't understand that like. Even
you can hear that?
That I can hear that. And that people think that we're just kind of making it up on the spot. Even though it hopefully it seems like we're just being very conversational, it's all very planned out. And to think that it's okay to just be like, to just shout something
how weird
at you and, or like request a song. Like, well,
this happens.
This is actually a very like well planned out. And we will change the set, you know, if I feel like
it's going one way and we need to pick it up or something, I'll just shout back to the band, you know, we need to do this now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we will do that. But like to think as an audience member that you...
I know, it's weird. Or I was at a show recently and something shocking happened in the story and my friend turned to me and she was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And I want to be like, you know, this is fiction, right?
Yeah.
You can't believe what? Like, it's a story someone wrote. So, literally anything could happen.
Yeah.
It was working.
Yeah. It was working.
I mean, that's like a sign that it's working.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or not.
The cell phone thing is a...
It's a real thing.
Problem.
Still, like, who doesn't know at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's not the phone going off. It's taking pictures and videotaping.
Yeah.
And the problem is...
It's an insidious problem everywhere.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
You don't do it during shows.
I don't do it during shows.
There are multiple problems with it, though. When it's visible to people.
Yeah.
Then... I can't stop thinking about it and what it's going to look like on the internet when you post it. Like that's the first thing that happens. Yeah. The second thing is all the people around you are now watching the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
They are now not involved in what the live experience that everybody is paid to be a part of.
Yeah. And you feel this way in a show in a like a Broadway context as well as a concert.
Absolutely.
Do you feel the same way if you're just performing like at the Carlisle or something?
Yeah, think about it. If you are at a live event and it is, you know, maybe a big event and it's filmed and there's a screen of what's happening over there. Always look at the screen.
Even if you're front row, you would look at the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. If there's someone next to you filming it, you're going to look at the screen and automatically that connection, that live connection is gone.
But don't you feel like, okay, so like that's
how do you
a
feel
thing
about
you
this?
Have to, I mean,
she's in a band. This happens at your shows too.
I feel like it's got to be a
people
different
people are in front of me with their phones
story.
Like this. And I'm like, who do I look at? And why aren't you connecting and watching the show in front of you?
Interesting. I feel like it might be more of a question for you as an audience member in a rock show because it's such a norm now that
it is.
But it doesn't bother you that they aren't just being in this moment and connecting with you?
I'm just so damn guilty of it that that I know that a lot of times my experience, it's not better because I'm looking at it through a screen, but it's like what I want to be, how I want to be living that experience at that moment.
But I think maybe you don't realize that it's a lesser experience than you could be having.
I am not going to disagree with that.
You.
No, I do agree with that. I think
also just because you're thinking about what you're shooting.
Yeah,
so you're
taking yourself out and wondering,
about
and you're wondering about, you're thinking about what you're going to do with this clip later. Like, why am I doing this? Like, what is the motivation?
Am I going to watch this later, or am I posting this to get as many likes as I can?
As many likes. I mean, I think for the band, it's interesting because I think more often than not would appreciate the fact that there's going to be pictures out there
publicity,
now that we can post
absolutely.
And it's like great. And now we can see and you don't ever want to hear what it sounds like through an iPhone at all.
that is my point.
Right.
It is not intended for that type of recording.
Right. No.
So when it's posted online and I have no control of it, it is now something that I didn't intend for it to be.
But all publicity is good publicity?
Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Many.
Because now anybody can comment on that and say I had a hard day and sure I'm going to crack or be flat on a couple because it's live. You know?
But and I think that I think that's such an expectation now that like things are so imperfect, things that you see. I mean, the way that people were so forgiving of that Adele performance. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It was like
the mics dropped
because,
in the piano.
Right, the mics dropped in the piano. And it's just like, just because now, like, there's such a fast turnover of stuff. It's like, well, we know the talent. Like, it's not about that. It's about, like, this one moment happened and let's move on. Like, this happened and we're going to talk about it.
Adele still said she woke up and cried the next day.
Absolutely.
Well,
Yeah.
but
it wasn't
I think
all
there's,
roses.
Like, I think there's a forgiving, an understanding now that what goes online is not representative of
I mean,
the
trolls are always going to be trolls.
Yeah.
Even if it was a perfect performance. Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, it's unfortunate that is such a pervasive part of audience experience now. And so therefore, as an artist, that's part of your experience. And it's really, I don't know if it's going to get better.
It's not. It's,
and I mean,
it's
you could.
Not.
Like, you could be one of the, you could be someone who gets on stage and says, like, I would really appreciate you to be here with me and not to do that. I mean, it's funny to experience that at weddings now. You know, you go and, like, the bride
that's
is like, do not
insane.
Take.
Oh,
what
is that
a
thing?
Oh, yeah. And I'm down.
out of that. I'm like, because for an example like that, I would be taking the entire like bride down the aisle, everything like that. And I would miss it.
Yeah.
I would miss it in the moment. So I appreciate being
told. Is that why they're asking not?
They're saying for everyone's enjoyment, leave your phones down. I appreciate it.
I have been to 5 weddings recently where I didn't get to see the actual wedding ceremony. I watched it through.
Because there are phones in your face.
Yes, because people have their iPads up, their iPhones up. I couldn't actually see the people, my friends getting married because there was a device in the way. Like, I couldn't.
It's an app.
We gotta figure this out.
And people are like, oh, you'll just watch it online later. Actually, no, what? I won't. No, I won't.
Well, I gotta save myself a lot of money then.
Why did I come here? Yeah.
Right. So have you ever heard of a couple requesting this?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's, and so that would make total sense for an artist to say, you know, I would really, for the experience and enjoyment of everybody.
And I do.
Oh, you do.
Oh,
okay.
I do. Oh, I stop the show and I ask people what they're texting or what they're, you know, nobody's safe.
Not at a Broadway show.
No,
I can't
do that.
At a Broadway show.
But if you're doing my show, you'll do that.
Yeah. And
so
what,
if I was at your show, would I know ahead of time that you're going to do that, or would I have to be called out?
Idea. You would have no idea. But if I see something light up in your lap, or if I see the little orange lights or anything, I'll stop the show and I'll.
Okay. So when we come to your show at the Carlisle, I'm going to make sure that Dara's sitting.
Not snapping.
Or just put you in the corner so she can't see that light.
I'm so glad to know this, because I would snap it. I would gram it. I would do all of these things.
I make a joke of it. I'm not like a total jerk about it.
But underneath.
At symphony shows and stuff, I've actually started saying, okay, everybody get your phones out now and I'll pose for singing pictures.
That's amazing.
Oh, that's smart.
So that, and then we can put them away and you can actually be here for me with me for the rest of the time and experience this. And then it's a funny thing instead of me boiling with anger.
But now that we taught you snap today.
I know.
Who knows?
Oh my God. I don't know that I can do it on my own. I got to be honest, guys. I don't know.
I think you're good. You don't need. I think
give your daughter one more year and she'll do it for you.
She'll figure it out. She'll do it. Yeah.
Okay. So a new album is coming out. Mm-hmm. It is nigh. When is the release?
May 3rd.
Okay.
And that's the beginning of my Carlisle run.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm there for 2 weeks. And this album was actually recorded live at the Carlisle.
Whoa.
Yeah, at the Cafe Carlisle.
Awesome.
And it's a combination of smash and, like, old standards. And and we have a bonus track of the Rainbow Connection. Because I recorded this while I was pregnant with my daughter, and we were doing tons and tons and tons of concerts while I was pregnant. And my doctor said that she could hear everything that was happening. So we decided at the end of every show to do one song for her. It was the Rainbow Connection. And we would always give my phone to somebody in the audience, and they would videotape it. And I would also videotape the audience, and everybody would wave to her so she could see all the beautiful people she was surrounded by, all the places
that's
she was at. And so that's our bonus track at the end. We actually did a studio version of it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Talk about like the opposite of your mom and you.
Yeah. Oh my God. Seriously. Yeah. She's getting way too much of my voice. And my mom
was
like,
so funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so special. Great. Wow.
Does she sing?
Yeah. She does now.
Yeah.
Like, she's obsessed with Mickey Mouse, especially Mickey Mouse Clubhouse and Goldie and Bear. It's also on Disney. I am obsessed with Goldie and Bear. And every time there's a song, she'll be like, oh. It is the most amazing thing. And when we sing Happy Birthday to people, she'll start doing that too. It's the most amazing thing ever. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and you have a new television show in development, or is that?
I just did a recurring role on The Good Wife. I was on the last several episodes of that series. And
wait, that just aired?
No, they haven't aired yet.
They haven't aired yet.
Yeah. Oh, I'm like at the end of the series.
I love The Good Wife. Talk about shows that your parents make you watch and then you fall in love with them.
Right?
Good
Wife. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
So that was
exciting. But why did I hear you talk about a show where you're a mom of a kid and is this like very old and this didn't happen?
Oh, I did a pilot last year.
for ABC that did not get picked up.
Okay.
And it was basically, it was basically
thanks
about
for bringing us back to that
Marissa Winoker, who was in Hairspray.
Yes.
Her husband wrote this about their life. It's about this like Broadway star who has a baby and moves to the suburbs and doesn't know what to do with her big personality.
Yes, and I was like, she can't get away from these actress roles.
Such a great.
Did it ever air? Nope,
never aired. Oh. It's really sweet.
Oh, man.
And Greg Grunberg played my husband. And
well, that's a big part of the actor's life. Those pilots that
right.
never the, make no, it.
Oh, I did two last year that didn't do anything.
The hustle.
So
they get paid and you have hustling. Fun.
Yeah, and then we're done.
There you go.
Just keep moving on.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, Megan. Thank you. This was a delight.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much.
Cannot wait for the show.
Yeah.
See you then.
But if all their reports are just movies and sports, they'll be missing the whole story.
Missing the whole story.
Cause history is made at night. So close the books, turn off the light, and listen. Let my heart be the teacher.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.